Please be seated. About 5 years ago, my wife and I had the great blessing to go to Israel, and one of the places that we visited was a very small village called Tabga. Tabga is where the Church of the Multiplication is located. It was first constructed about the year 350 and later enlarged about the year 480 before it was destroyed in 614 by the Persians. It was lost for over 1,300 years. And in 1931, it was discovered, and the next year they began to clean away all the rubble and get down to what was left of the original church. The only thing that was left was the mosaics. The mosaics that were inlaid in the floor. And to give you an idea, the size of the stones was about the size of an eraser on a pencil. And they're laid out. You can actually, they have glass over them, but you can look down through the glass and you can see these original mosaics of lotus and different flowers and birds and different animals. And the only thing that even hints that it has anything to do with the miracle of the loaves and fishes is one small mosaic in front of where the altar was placed. And there is simply a basket with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And my wife and I turned to the docent, the tour guide, and we said, you know, I'm surprised that they didn't work in something that was kind of more miraculous, that you saw the feeding of the 5,000. And the tour guide turned to us and he said, no, the miracle of multiplication is up to you. This story of the feeding of the 5,000 actually occurs in all 4 Gospels. Matthew 14, Mark 6, Luke 9, and John chapter 6. There are very tiny variations, but the basic gist of the story is the same. Jesus hears that John the Baptist has been beheaded. And he takes off with his disciples. The texts are all very clear, to a deserted place. And let me tell you, deserted, it makes Fruitland Park look like New York City. Okay, it's deserted. There's, even now, there's nothing anywhere close because there's no water. And it's super rocky hillside. But as we look at this story, we see that each of the gospel writers talk about basically the same thing. Jesus challenges the disciples not to look at the scarcity of everything that they look and see. And there are 5,000 people here. We got, you know, a kid brought his lunch. You know, 5 small barley loaves and 2 fish. What good is that? Jesus challenges them to look beyond the scarcity to God's provision. The disciples look and they say, we have 5 loaves and 2 fish. Instead of saying, we have Jesus. We have seen him miraculously heal people just within the last day. Here, we're out in the middle of nowhere and we have an enormous crowd who have followed. Surely God's going to show up in miraculous ways and work through him amazing works. They look at their own resources instead of looking at God's provision. They look at all the obstacles. They even say, you know, well, we could, in John's gospel, they say, well, we could send them into the neighboring town to buy some food. There are no neighboring towns. And even if they did late in the day, if they went to try and buy something, there would be no merchants. There would be no one. The day's baking was over. There were no other resources. All they could look to was God. The disciples looked at an immense need, but Jesus looked at a great opportunity. The disciples looked at their immediate and natural resources, and Jesus calls them to look at God's provision. The disciples looked at the people as an urgent burden, and Jesus looked at them, John's Gospel tells us, as sheep who were looking for a shepherd. In many ways, this is a story about our own faith or our own lack of faith. How often we look around at our modest resources and we say, oh my gosh, what could God do with these? Really? Have you read the book? Not the prayer book, but the Bible. If you read the Bible, you see that over and over, God takes very minimal resources. Not just bread and fish. He takes 12 of the least likely people to succeed and chooses them to be what? His agents of transformation in the world. At least 11 of the 12. This, as many stories, begins very interestingly in Matthew's Gospel. It says Jesus looked upon them and he had compassion. He was driven by compassion. In some stories, that's just implied, but in Matthew's Gospel, it's just right there. He was driven to perform the miraculous, not because of the need, but because of love. He looked at these people and he said, oh my gosh, we got to do something. And then he turned to the disciples and said, so, what's the plan? Instead of them turning back and saying, Jesus, what's the plan? They tried to fix it themselves. There are many other stories in which we see compassion drives miracles. The man born blind, the lame beggar on the roadside, the man who's lowered down through the roof by his friends. Go back and read those stories and you'll see it's compassion that initiates the miracle. There's also another very interesting piece about this. And of course, as Episcopalians, I'm sure you caught several references to Eucharistic action. He prayed, he blessed, he broke, he gave, and then he calls people to gather up what's left. You're going to hear all those same verbs in the Eucharistic prayer this morning. You're going to hear them because that's the way God works. He takes and he calls people of faith and he says, are you going to pray? Are you going to pray so hard and so long and so desperately until you figure out what God's will is? Are you just going to do the kind of quickie? I hope it makes it through the sheetrock, except you guys don't have sheetrock. Through the woods. We ask God to bless whatever we bring. That may be ourselves. It may be our offering. It may be our pain. Maybe our sickness. We bring a lot of things to the Lord and we ask Him to bless them. Breaking is tough. It's okay if we ask God to break bread, but how about if we ask God to break us? To break our pride. To break our self-reliance. To break our hard hearts. To break our stingy ways. To break our number one method of operation, which is looking at ourselves and our resources instead of God's provision. And then he gave. Isn't that when the people of God and the church of God are at their best? When they're giving? When they're giving without counting the cost? When they're giving lavishly and luxuriously and beyond their means? Isn't that when the people of God are at their best? And then, just to be careful stewards, he says, gather up any crumbs that might have fallen. We may look at those crumbs and see them not as worth a whole lot. But down the line, down the road, God may use some of those crumbs for his glory. This is not just a miraculous story that appeared 2,000 years ago in Tabgha, but it's a story that God repeats over and over. It's a story that God repeats when we gather at the altar to break bread. But it's also a story about our lives. About our lives and how God uses them. And he can use them most when we look beyond our own resources, beyond our own limits, beyond the limits of our very small, fragile faith. May we look at him and his provision and his plan that he's working out day by day. I don't know about you, but I've learned to look for the miraculous every single day of my life. And I am often not disappointed, because when we look expectantly, when we open our eyes, when we say, God, break us, use us, mold us, fashion us to do your will, it's then that those miraculous things happen day after day, week after week, year after year. People of God, expect the miraculous, because we serve a God who didn't just work 2,000 years ago, but continues to work even today. Amen.